Well, of course, it has a long and checkered, almost impossible to see past, checkered and checkered and long and thin and drawn out. Well, it's a network, I suppose you might say. I'm this kid one time, see. And I'm in the dime store. Now, this is a dime store culture we live in. I suppose you are aware that hardly any nation in the world has dime stores like America. I mean, the real dime stores. This is in a sense, almost... how long has it been since you've really been in Woolworth? Say the one down here on... right on Times Square there, 44th and Broadway, Walt? 45th, is it there? This is in a sense, a microcosm, you know? It's really a condensation of everything that is. There's the art department, you know, they got these plastic lampshades with plastic roses that light up in the dark. Oh, yes. And they've got these enormous plaster tigers with gold chains hanging on them. Beautiful things, just magnificent, with gilt claws. And they have diamonds in their teeth. You never saw anything so beautiful. Oh, yes, it's true beauty. And they have these plaques that you hang up, you know, that look like African natives. Big plaques, and they're kind of made out of plaster, you know. And these African natives got big gold earrings hanging. It's beautiful. And then they have a pet department. They have these plastic parakeets, and they're yelling and hollering down there. $1.98. The saddest thing of all I saw the other day in this Woolworths was a pair of finches on sale, special sale on finches. They also had a special sale on linoleum going on there and a special sale on ping pong paddles. And these finches were going along with the rest. Two for a buck yet. Life is cheap in these United States, let me tell you. Well, I'm fooling around down there in the dime store, and of course, I've always had a very definite weakness for dime store chicks. I don't know what there is about that adenoidal type girl who's standing back of the candy department there selling the spearmint leaves and the little artificial peanuts, you know, that taste for some reason or other like banana oil. You've had those things? And she's standing back there making out with the things, you know, with the scales. And there's always a guy talking on the PA system saying, roughly, well, all of you shoppers who have not received your free ballpoint pen, please stop over here to aisle 7. Aisle 7, in just a moment, we will begin our big advertising campaign. The manufacturer of these world-renowned ballpoint pens has decided upon an advertising campaign that is based on word of mouth. As all of you know, word of mouth advertising is the kind of advertising that one cannot buy. If you will stop... Well, I'm in the middle of all that world, you see. In the middle of it all. And they have goldfish in plastic envelopes. Instant goldfish there come. Yeah, they tear them right off a card like you tear ballpoint pens and stuff off a card. In the end, I suppose all of us will be delivered in plastic envelopes. As a matter of fact, I suspect that a lot of us would feel a sense of relief if we did live in a plastic envelope surrounded by a lukewarm body temperature fluid forever. Never have any problems that way. Insulated from it all. So one thing I did see in the dime store that I thought you might be interested in, it says genuine fish eggs. Yes, it says genuine fish eggs. They come in this special solution that says just add water and they develop into real fishes. It's amazing. Yes, it's true. It says grow your own fish. It's astounding. Well, of course, it is true that the amazement at the process of life itself is eternal. That the very first caveman who crawled out of the first bit of antediluvian mud started a long chain of things when he turned to his friend Charles and said, you know, sometimes I wonder what it's all about. Well, of course, this problem has been reverberating throughout the centuries. It finally resulted in all kinds of things. The Ed Sullivan Show, the new Mercury Monterey, it's resulted in all kinds of wild things, an attempt to somehow produce a semblance of reality. So I'm down there in the basement as a kid. Now, I want to tell you how deeply ingrained this dime store culture is in our world. It even has overtones and shadings of guilt. Believe me, there isn't a dime store today that is worthy of its name that doesn't have a good supply of crucifixes on hand, as well as all kinds of plastic wood paints and various other things to create your own world if you can. The best you can. Well, I'm this kid, you see, and I'm fooling around in the dime store. You know, you just... It's an American kid. One thing about dime stores, they always have, for some reason or other, can you explain this to me, maroon woodwork. The woodwork is maroon. I don't know why. They all have a maroon. You know, the maroon and gold seems to be the motif of the dime store wherever you go, no matter who runs it, Kresge, Woolworth, all maroon and gold. So I'm in this maroon and gold dime store with the big flat fan blades hanging down there and the insufferable coffee at this gigantic barrel where it said Heyer's Root Beer. Draw yourself a real Stein next to the hot dog platter, the place where they sold the jigsaw puzzles and the plastic roses and all the other objet d'art, which are so beloved by the hoi polloi, of which I was a sworn party card-carrying member. I'm a true hoi polloier. Well, I'm flumming around in the jewelry department. Now, the jewelry department of a dime store is, in a sense, a true... It's an education in mores, attitudes, fears, the whole business. Well, I'm flubbing around in the jewelry department, planning to make a purchase for my father's birthday, which is a kind of obeisance we pay to the great gods that have produced us anyway. Obeisance or perhaps a sharp reprimand. I don't know. I wonder about... That's an interesting problem, too. Of course, we're pulling both ways all the time, Walters. As you know, Durrell has pointed this out, there's the death wish on one side and there's the desire to grow into King Kong on the other. And they're pulling us all the time in between. Did I ever tell you about the time that I'm with this chick? I'm a little kid. We go to see, it was on a Saturday, we go to see King Kong. And King Kong. And King Kong is hanging on the side of the Empire State Building. And he's swatting those airplanes down. You remember when they were coming in, buzzing him with the machine guns going? He's swatting them down, went after them. I wonder if the guys up there, up at Empire, you know, all the WOR television people are up at Empire. I wonder if they ever look out on that parapet and see somehow the ghost, the forms of that great man that preceded them. Or can you call King Kong a man? Which actually is the point of my story here. This chick I was with, whom I was dating very seriously at the time, being roughly age 12, I was dating like every 4 or 5 months. I would take her to the thing. We had the sock hop or whatever it was. Well, I was very concerned about her. She fell madly in love with King Kong. I learned a lot about life and things, biology and everything that time. But King Kong, I figured, you know, King Kong couldn't make it because we have a belief in America that anything that doesn't shave all the time steadily, like every day, is somehow suspect. You hear it every time, all the time. I heard the other day, I heard a senator was talking about, he referred to Castro as that bearded beatnik. Well, of course, what bugged him was the fact he had a beard. The idea of a beard is enough to make everyone, little hackles go up all over the place. Why do you think a lot of people who enjoy making hackles are growing beards for the point? A lot of them hate beards. You know, I'll tell you about a beard. The only time I ever grew a beard, I felt itchy. I still itch a little bit from it. But at the same time, I knew one thing. The minute I put that beard grew, Walt, I don't know how to express it. It was a dangerous weapon. Matter of fact, that was one of the reasons why I shaved it off. It became a little dangerous, a little too much so. But King Kong is clinging there to that parapet, and I'm living in the dime store world. That's where you bought things. And I'm making the scene in the jewelry department one day. Now, we're getting right down to the basis of guilt here. Now, of course, in the dime store world, guilt exists on two levels, and it can be spelled two ways, both with the U and without the U. Sometimes they're synonymous, by George. I remember that statue. There was a statue just outside of the main road that went through Jackson Park in Chicago. This statue was done. Have any of you ever heard of a famous sculptor by the name of Lorenzo Taft? Does that name mean anything to you? Was there ever such a sculptor? I don't know. I don't know because this was a fabled name in my family. Every time we drive past this pile of masonry, my old man would say, "That was done by Lorenzo Taft." Well, I don't know whether he knew who Lorenzo Taft was. He'd read it in the Tribune. And of course, he got his fantasies very in rich and copious quantities from that paper. But Somehow it made it more official. We'd go past that statue and he'd say it was done by Lorenzo Taft. Well, it was a pile of people standing on one another's heads. And underneath it, it said victory over all, or life, or eternity, or God, or something. And it was a long, curving pile of masonry. It was like made out of concrete. And these people were standing on top of each other with flags. And some of them were holding tridents, you know, the big forks with the three prongs. One of them was holding an enormous cornucopia. You know, he was pouring, looked like grapes and apples and grapefruit and stuff out on the head of a kewpie that was sitting down there picking its foot. Well, you know, I was very impressionable at that age. And somehow the name Lorenzo Taft began to be very important to me. And I suspect that a lot of people voted for many Tafts after that, purely on the basis of these early recollections that weren't pure recollections, but were somehow connected with cornucopias and grapefruits and oranges. And kewpies that picked their feet, and guys that held big tridents up, see? Well, it's a very complicated process. I'm trying to tell you that in simple, uncomplicated terms. Right? Right, I knew you'd get it. Hey, George, they're really right on their toes tonight. The barometric pressure is just right out in Staten Island tonight. The mines are snapping like whips. Well, I'm going past there in the jewelry department, see, knee deep in all this stuff. And of course, a kid doesn't know the difference, really. I guess that's where you separate the slobs from the people. The slobs really think that the diamond is a very expensive substitute for the zircon. You know, it's true that the slob truly believes that plastic is wood. I've known many a slob in my time who discovered late in life walnut. He says, you know, they're bringing out this new substitute for plastic. It's beautiful. It scratches. Well, the slob world is a very complicated world. Speaking of slobs, this is WOR AM and FM New York. By George. It's funny how the mind brings one thing to another. You know, it's a free association there, like you say. Well, I'm fooling around in the jewelry department there, Walter, and this is when it hit. I'm looking for a tie pin for my old man. Well, now, they had a collection of chromium-plated tie pins there. Now, I don't know whether you've ever seen a chromium-plated tie pin on a 75-cent tie, but the combination is enough to set the blood of any good card-carrying slob a-racing, especially the kind of slob that wears white-on-white ties on a white-on-white shirt. Well, they had various chromium-type. Oh, boy, when I think of some of the stuff that I picked for Christmas gifts in those days now. Did I ever tell you about the orange and alabaster perfume squirter that I once gave? I don't want to get into that now. That's another terrible problem. It goes all the way back. It's awful. It's rotten. You don't want to hear about it. But I'm walking through the jewelry department. I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and I'm about to spring for a chromium-plated tie clip that had a pheasant rising from a field of purest green glass. Well, I'm looking at this with a great deal of interest because, you see, it was the only one that was for 25 cents. It was the big one, the most expensive one. All the rest of them were strictly a dime. And this was a quarter. Now, my life savings at that time totaled probably 40 cents. And this meant a considerable outgo, and it meant a considerable tribute to put at the feet of my father, the one half of the great team that produced me, you see. At the same time, again, I didn't know whether or not I was objecting to the fact that I was in that world or whether I dug it. I suspect the reason I was buying secretly without knowledge, I think that we have great animal instincts, I was buying an atrocity to give him. To fling it in his face, you brought me into the world, take this, you crumb. Yes, Hitler's marching in Europe, and you brought me into this world. A few years, I'll be marching in Europe, and you brought me into this world. You crumb here, chromium. Put that on your white-on-white 75-cent tie, bum. Well, of course, this was a problem, see? So I'm looking at this chromium-plated tie clip with that obsidian-colored pheasant rising from a field of purest green glass, and my eyes are bugging with desire. Now, I don't know whether they were bugging with desire to own that clip, or to give that clip, or to somehow get back at what was the problem that caused me to come about in the first place. Possibly my old man had the same problems. In fact, I know he did. Later on came up, I'll never forget the time he beat me bowling one day. Left-handed. And he was a right-handed bowler. He did it just to show me who was boss. Boy, I'll talk about that someday. And I was working on a hook. He says, I'll beat you with a straight ball, left-handed. Give you 30 pins to spare. Well, he beat me by 47. You see, it's emblazoned there. Who of us is... I mean, which one of us can stand in the shadow of Abraham Lincoln? Beard and all, beatnik. Yeah. Well, I'm standing there in the jewelry department looking at the scene there, and I'm weighing one possibility against the other. Well, I finally decided that maybe I'd better consider it for a while. And I left the jewelry department and went fooling around in the model airplane department for about 15 minutes for reasons of my own. I was hung on escape even then. Flight. Get away from it all. Fly. Go. And I'm looking at stick models, ROG. Rise off ground. You know the phrase, ROG models? Means rise off ground. There's the hand-launched model, and there's the ROG model. I'll never forget the time I got to know a kid who held the North American junior title for endurance model aircraft indoor ROG division. Talk about unsung heroes. How about unsung heroes? Did you hear about the guy that died today? He was the first guy that flew the Pacific. He didn't even make WPAT's newscast. He flew the wrong ocean. You see, no, that's true. He flew the Pacific, I think, a couple of days before Lindbergh flew the Atlantic. And any flyer will tell you the Pacific is a lot more flying than the Atlantic. And he died unsung. Well, that's the way life goes. You got to pick your place. You got to pick your... Believe me, Roger Maris was just another ball player with the Kansas City Athletics. With the New York Yankees, he's Roger Maris. It's a big difference. The Life magazine reporters didn't go out every afternoon to see the Kansas City Athletics on the expense account, but they every afternoon see Bobby, what's his name, at second base there, the All-American boy. Richardson, you say his name is? Well, so it goes. So I'm this kid, see, I'm going through the jewelry department, Eddie. You got to get oriented here, of Woolworth's. You know, it's a funny thing. Every time I see a Woolworth sign today, I warm inside. It's funny. I can't stay out of those places. It's really funny. I itch when I go in Sardi's. That's the difference between a guy that makes it. It really is. It honestly is. I'm telling you. It seriously is in our world. You got to get rid of your old skin. If I could learn to walk with clear eye, with straight back into Tiffany's. By George, within 2 weeks, I would be a Tiffany type. But when I think of getting a hold of a tie clip, where do you think I head? I still got the chromium number down there. With that obsidian pheasant rising from the field of purest green glass, they haven't changed that. Because, you see, I suspect that low-level objet d'art never changes. I believe that in the days of the Roman Empire, the slobs were buying plastic roses. We never think of any slobs around in the days that they were there. Don't forget they were there. If there's anything that is universal, it is us. The Woolworth crowd. We are universal. Believe me, there are more people walk in and out on an average, I would say in a year, in and out of those swinging doors on Woolworth's Times Square store than ever see the inside of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And they go in for the same thing, just to rubberneck, to look at the wonders of civilization. Well, I get in there that day, that fateful day, and I'm making the scene. I'm going to pick out this chromium tie clip. I turn it down. I find myself in the airplane division. And then next to the airplane division is a great big thing. A big box. They don't do this in the dime store as much anymore. They do it in higher class places, but in those days it was a dime store gambit. It said grab bag. Mystery package grab bag. 25 cents. It's in the toy department. Mystery package grab bag. Throw down your quarter and you pick any package. And they were wrapped, you see. There were little ones, there were big ones. Guess what size I picked? Yeah, I don't even have to tell you. That's right. And furthermore, guess how long it took me to pop with that quarter? I debated for about an hour over that tie clip for my old man's birthday. How long do you think it took me to debate over this thing there where the grab bag was? I don't think they have electronic equipment even today that can measure that kind of time lapse. I'd say it was about a quarter of a, maybe a third of a millisecond. I saw the sign said, grab bag, what's in these packages? And I popped. I gave the lady my quarter. Well, now, there's a funny thing about buying a package that is all wrapped. Buying something you can't see. I learned something about reality, too, in those days, by the way, just making that scene. We will buy a wrapped package like 50 times quicker than we will buy an unwrapped one. Any kind of package, whether it be an international plan, whether it be a political platform, as long as it's wrapped nicely, we'll pop. The minute you start to know the facts about it, you're not interested because the facts are always the facts. I mean, you know, the less you can say on a political platform, the more you'll have people following you. Because the minute you start telling them, well, what about that gang down in Peru that you got a fist fight with? They don't want to hear that. They want you to say things like, well, what I'm going to bring you is truth, beauty. I'm going to bring you happiness. That's enough. I mean, you know, you don't want to hear any more. So I'm standing in front of the grab bag there, Eddie. I put down the quarter, and there was a lady who had frizzed hair, you know, the kind that, like a Brillo pad, sort of gray and blackish frizzed hair with rimless glasses, an angry, thin lady. And I go up to her, and I put the quarter down. She says, are you sure? I said, what do you mean? She says, are you sure you want to spend 25 cents on the grab bag? This old doll had been through the mill, you see. And I said, well, there's a big package there. And she says, are you sure? Does your mother know you're going to spend the quarter? I said, I'm going to surprise her. She says, I guess you will. She says, is that your money? You know, there are some old dolls like that still left in dime stores. She says, is that your money? And I said, yes, it's my money. I saved it on the paper route. She says, all right. Clank. Down goes the quarter. She says, which one do you want? I said, this one. I picked one that was about 4.5 feet square. She hits the bell, and that was the end. Once the bell is hit, forget it. Boing, chung, in goes the quarter, the drawer, that was it. Well, now I got my package. Now, you don't open it in front of people. There's something about wrapped packages. You want to go into the hollow log somewhere and open them. And this is an interesting psychological problem, too. We won't talk about that, but it is. You want to do that. So I take this package, and I stick it under my arm, and I go down the thing, and I walk down the stairs through the jewelry department and out. I go down the street. I turn left on the street corner. I get into the line where they're waiting for the bus. I'm on my way home now, and I still got my package. I'm going insane, you know, wanting to know what's in it. I get into the bus. I sit down on the seat, and I hope no one sits with me. I'm sitting on a seat there, see? And nobody does. There's about 9 people on the bus. The bus takes off, and we go about 4 or 5 blocks. We get out sort of in the country, you know, with the vacant lots. I look around. I see nobody's watching, and I start opening the package. Should I go on? Do you want to hear it? I start opening the package. I rip one corner of it. I rip the other corner, and it was wrapped with this brown tape, you know, that they use in stores. Very tough stuff. So I'm ripping it up and down. I finally begin to edge it out. It is a gigantic Shirley Temple cutout book with party clothes and prom skirts and cashmere sweater. Shirley Temple! I don't have to tell you that even then, I was not so much of a slob, but I'll tell you, even then, at that tiny age when I was still cracking through the chrysalis stage, even then I would break out into a cold sweat and a rash at the mention of the name Shirley Temple. And so now I own a gigantic 4.5-foot cutout book of Shirley Temple in 17 obnoxious colors, all of which ran into the other ones. A rotten printing job. 25 centimes. 1/4 of a buck. Over 1/2 my worldly goods shot in one brief, wild, instantaneous spree. So I'm sitting there. It's difficult to tell you about this. You sit there and you don't know what to do. You don't know whether to yell and cry. At 9, you do, you know. Or whether to make the scene, as they would say today. Like what you always wanted and what you went in there for was a Shirley Temple cutout book. Well, I take the latter course. So, with great interest, I begin to look through the Shirley Temple cutout book. Just like I was interested in it. And I'm looking through this Shirley Temple book, and of course, my eyes are puddling up, and I'm about ready to pop right there in the streetcar, 2 bits down the drain. We are now about 19 blocks away from the dime store. By the way, the bus was a nickel. I have shot 30 cents, and I've gotten nowhere. So I get out of the bus on this funny moment. I walk 19 blocks back to the dime store. I go upstairs to the toy department. I stand in front of the box that says, gigantic grab bag, 25 cents. Anything in here, 2 bits. And there's the skinny lady with the black hair and the rimless glasses. And she says, have you opened your package? I said, yes. Do you want your quarter back? Yes. Boing. Reaches in, gives me a quarter. I hand her the Shirley Temple book, and without a word, I go back downstairs. The greatest lady I've met in years. Well, I get downstairs. By now, I'm feeling funny, you know. I'm feeling all kinds of guilt things, because I know that didn't make any difference, you know. She took that book back. It didn't make any difference. I had loused up. There's a much better word for it. I had done it, and I could not escape it. I get into the bus. I go about 12.5 blocks, and a fat lady sits next to me. And without any preamble, she says, what is that that's hanging on your sweater? And I said, what? She says, hanging on your elbow. And I look down, and hanging on my elbow, my right elbow of my tartan plaid sweater, is an enormous, dark blood orange, solid glass, and rhinestone brooch, which somehow had hooked itself on me in my trip through the jewelry department. I look at this, my pin. I take my pin off, and I look at this fantastic thing, and it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Being blood orange and lined completely with rhinestones and silver-plated lead that weighed at least 1.5 pounds. Somehow it had hooked on me when I had brushed through the jewelry department. Well, 15 minutes later, I am home. I am sitting in the kitchen waiting for my mother to get home from the PTA. She comes into the door, and I says, Ma, I got a surprise for you. She says, what? I says, I got a pin. And I gave her a blood-red brooch lined with artificial diamonds and chromium-plated lead that weighed 1.5 pounds. And she says, this is beautiful. I says, yeah, I picked it out. She says, well, why do you give me this? It's your father's birthday. I said, well, I figured that Dad would prefer it if I gave you a present. Oh, what a rotten thing I was doing. Oh. And she says, well, that's very nice. And about a half an hour later, the old man came home. And my mother says, look what Jeannie did. He gave me this for your birthday. And he looked across the red cabbage and the meatballs at me. And he says, why, that's very nice. That is the best present you could have given me. I says, well, I thought it was very pretty. With becoming modesty. My kid brother was burned up. Because he got my father a 35-cent baseball glove. And he was really bugged. Obviously, I had scored big. I can't tell you the end of this. I just can't tell you the end of this. As a matter of fact, I won't tell you the end of this. There are some things... Oh, fellows, I'm not worth it. It's no use. I'm going to burn. It's no use. I'm going to lighten the fires, fellas. It's no use. Well, I'll tell you briefly. Hold your hand on it there. We're going to need it. What happened? 10 minutes after my magnificent gesture, my mother is on the phone telling Aunt Teresa. She yells at my cousin Warren because he's never thoughtful like me. 15 minutes later, she's telling Aunt Clara, who is putting on my cousin Buddy, because he doesn't remember anybody's birthday but his own. And in fact, he thinks his birthday is like 45 days a month. 25 minutes later, she is talking to Aunt Kate, who 5 minutes later is burning my cousin Al in a very sensitive spot because he's a spoiled, rotten brat. She then tells my Aunt Min, who turns like a tiger on my cousin Cullum. One after the other, it's building up. By bedtime that night, I had become a legend in the family. The first true philanthropist the Shepherd family ever knew. That legend persists to this day. It is brought up time after time. The time Jeannie bought the pin for his mother on his father's birthday. Oh, there are things we will answer for. We will answer for the sins. We will all burn in the fiery furnace. It's no use, fellas. No use. Yeah, it's no use. Look, fellas. You can't sing it off for me. You can't make contact any longer. It's too late. I am doomed.
Okay. I just wanted you to know what a rotten person I am. Just let you know how truly rotten a person can be. Speaking of rotten people, we have with us the Paper Book Gallery tonight. And they're about as rotten as they come. They're at 399 6th Avenue at 8th Street, and they have probably the insanest record collection in the Western Hemisphere. This is the kind of record collection, you know, where they say emergency sale, have got to get rid of all the junk that's been in the basement for 9 years, we've got to get rid of it now for the space. This is the kind of stuff that doesn't even get in sales like that. This is the sort of thing that represents a compendium of human recording folly beyond comprehension. I might also say the sort of thing which 1,000 years from now, most of these records will be true collector's items. There is one record down there, for example, of 75 Croatians roller skating to the Croatian national anthem and whistling through their teeth in stereo. fantastic record. Well, by the way, with Balkan record liners. So I would suggest you get down there and take a look at these records. If you buy one, they'll throw in any other in the house free. I'm glad to do it. The Paper Book Gallery. Now, let's see. We also have with us American Heritage tonight. If you want to know about American Heritage, which is a magnificent... it's not a magazine, really. It's a hardcover magazine. It isn't, really. It's $3.95 an issue. Very expensive, very beautiful magazine. They would be more than pleased to send you a representative copy. They sell for $3.95 each and do not sell on the newsstand. They would love to send you a representative copy for $1. And it is a magnificent buck's worth. Even if you can't stand history, which most of us can't stand because it has a tendency to nip at our hocks like the hounds of hell, I would suggest you send the buck to Hounds of Hell, W-O-R. No, excuse me. That's $1 to American Heritage, W-O-R, New York, New York, in care of me, Friendly Fred, the sneaky person. Oh, I wonder where we're going to turn. Where do we go? Lorenzo Taft. Well, there was another guy, too, who made a big statue there in Jackson Park. What was his name? Gutzon Borglum. Is there such a name? There can't be a name like that. This sounds like a Bob and Ray name. Well, I'm a kid, you know, and there's a picture of what looks like a gigantic Greek golfer. A statue of an enormous Greek golfer wearing a pair of horns and a long concrete robe. And he has a wreath on one hand and what looks like a number three iron in the other. And there's a great big pennant. And under this thing, it says something like, repent. This big concrete Greek golfer. And my old man, after we passed the Lorenzo Taft statue, would say, that was done by Gutzon Borglum. I guess he got that in the Chicago Tribune along with the colonel, too. Gutzon Borglum. Was there a Gutzon Borglum? Oh, there couldn't have been. No, of course not. Impossible. But I'll tell you this, right in the heart of Jackson Park, there's a gigantic concrete Greek golfer holding a concrete wreath and a concrete number three mashie. And behind him is a big concrete flag that says repent. I don't know whether Gutzon Borglum was responsible for it, but by George, it burned itself into the consciousness and the subconsciousness of many a poor old repentant Chicagoan of that period. Time, keep your knees loose, that's all. Give them a low silhouette. And I would, well, it doesn't matter one way or the other, I suppose.